everybody, and welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hope you're having a fantastic day. We can feel definitely grateful for the sunshine, right? This is Jisuke. Day two for me. Such a pleasure and honor to spend the hour with you learning something new. Hey, I'm learning right alongside with you from our great experts and journalists during our weekday lunch. And so we're in this together. So let's go ahead and get started with John Najarian, co-founder of Market Rebellion and Najarian Family Office. Hi, John. How are you?
Great to be with you. Thank you very much.
Well, you know what? I saw a very troubling headline. It says that U.S. stocks might not be the best bet in 2020. Why is that when it's been the longest bull market in American history?
Well, that's right. And they are wrong again. Of course, this is by a company based in Germany, Allianz. And many times overseas investors are jaundiced or their view is clouded by the location of the people that they're pitching to. So this is yet again an attempt for folks to say, hey, you know, look to the EEM, look to the emerging markets, look to Europe. And the problem is you just don't have growth over in Europe like you've got here, which is why, of course, they have negative interest rates. So if you and I were on the phone with the analyst from Allianz making this call, Neil Duane, I think we would both kind of say, so exactly why do you have negative interest rates if your economy over there is so strong? And there would be a lot of dead air because, quite frankly, they have been saying buy in Europe, buy in emerging markets for the last 4 or 5 years. And for the last 4 or 5 years, they've been wrong. This will be yet another example of that.
So, John, I'm definitely listening to you over the Allianz people. But any legitimacy to their concerns about the heated run-up to the 2020 election?
And there's always some legitimacy based somewhere deep down in there. And one of the things will be there could be more volatility. But, you know, European markets, let's just say for a second, are dominated by banks. That's just a fact that they're stock markets, whereas ours, technology stocks, dominate our markets. They do not have the sorts of companies like Apple and Twitter and Facebook and, you know, Netflix. I mean, we go on and on. They don't have those. They have instead stocks that have struggled mightily, partly because they've not been able to refinance like our banking sector did. I take our banks over virtually every bank out of Europe, and it's not just because I'm being a homer. it's just they don't innovate over there. Like I say, interest rates are negative, so try telling a consumer that not only are you not going to pay them, but you're going to charge them to hold their money. You won't find very many of those banks on smart investors' lists. So I think even though they are historically cheap, they will look cheaper at this time next year versus our stocks.
Well, we're running out of time, but really quickly, can you tell us tomorrow the Fed's latest interest rate decision hits at a time when the outlook on trade talks remains uncertain? So can you fill us in?
Sure. In all likelihood, it'll be just another jawboning session rather than a movement session because they were pretty clear in their last meeting that the Fed is not going to make another move unless they see a catalyst out there. And thus far, since the Fed chairman has just been on Capitol Hill, he didn't cite anything that would lead us to believe he's going to cut or raise rates. And so I'd say this will be just a chance for him to say, well, employment's looking good, but we're still not seeing inflation, so we're going to stand pat. And we'll take another look in January.
Well, John, thanks again. You're a wealth of information and always a voice of calm. So thank you so much. This is John Najarian, co-founder of Market Rebellion and Najarian Family Office. It's joining us now is Kelly Tomblin, CEO of Entren. It's the first utility contractor to sign on to the National CEO Action Pledge for Diversity. Hi, Kelly. How are you?
Hi, you good? Good.
Well, first off, tell us what this national pledge is all about.
Well, we started thinking about the role diversity, equity, and inclusion plays in our company and the world, and we knew we wanted to do something more formal. And with this pledge, we are making a commitment at the highest levels in our company to pursue diversity, equity, and inclusion structurally and, I would say, emotionally. So we're happy to be one of the first contractors, but 800 other CEOs have signed on to this pledge in recognition that it really does have to start at the top.
I love that you have described this as not only diversity, but you've also mentioned equity and inclusion. And those things are not always, they can sometimes be exclusive of one another. Can you explain each and why each prong is so important?
Sure. And, you know, I think the conversation right now has a little bit of what I call diversity fatigue. You know, I know that in 1995 at my utility in New Jersey, we had a director of diversity, and we've really been talking about it for a long time, but we know that we have not made the strides that we wanted to. The numbers, especially in our energy industry, bear that out. So we started thinking about what's going wrong. Why aren't we getting the diverse ages, the diverse gender, the diverse race, the diverse able bodies? Why aren't we getting the diversity in our companies and our industry we wanted? And we came up with this idea that, you know, diverse means you get asked to the party, but inclusion means you get asked to dance. And this idea that diversity doesn't work if you don't feel part of the team and you're not included, you're not giving the same feedback, you're not really welcomed and loved the same way as everyone else. And we started thinking about this concept of equity. Research shows us that diverse candidates don't get the same feedback. They don't get the same risk profile. There's a lot around this concept of equity, not just pay, which is a big part of it, and we're hearing a lot about that, but it's also how they're treated, how they're promoted, how they're developed. So unless you have diversity, equity, inclusion, you're not going to get the diversity that I know our company needs for innovation and new ideas and what our customers are calling for based on the changing demographics of our country. Well, so they have to work together or they don't work at all.
I love how you describe that, because I do hear that as a complaint from many of my women friends and my friends that are people of color that are working in various industries, that sometimes diversity ends up being lip service because there's not enough resources and support to make sure that that inclusion happens.
You know, really, we don't want to check a box here. This is deeply personal to our company. It was founded on back in the day when Italians couldn't get jobs in Chicago. I came from a place in southern West Virginia where hillbillies were, you know, I had to take accident reduction lessons when I moved to New York 3 times a week, so I wouldn't sound so hillbilly. I moved to Jamaica, and I was the only white person there. I was American, and I was leading a group of people who were neither white nor American, and I was a woman. And I learned a big lesson on what the impact is when you feel loved and wanted, despite you being different. So for us, it's really an emotional issue for us at Intrin. So we don't want to check a box. We want to say, how do we change the world? How do we change our company? And how do we really use the gifts and talents that so many people have that are overlooked? And overlooked unconsciously, a lot of what we're doing in DEI is really looking at an unconscious bias.
Well, I love that
you hire people. Yeah.
I love that you said you're speaking about the unconscious part, because it can be subversive, because it can also be very systemic as well.
Mm-hmm. We all are recovering from something. We have a society that has taught us to be, I don't want to say it, but, you know, to treat different people differently and to feel like we're part of a group, and then there's the other group over there, the other. And it's subtle. It's been the media, especially when I grew up, and we're working to change all the unconscious messages we get. But there's so much research and so many tools now to look at your own unconscious bias. We all have it. And just being able to have those candid and courageous conversations in the workplace to say, you know, this isn't probably all my fault, but this is what's inside of me now, and how do I change it? So that's really what I'm excited about, the power to have real conversations, to really get real with each other, and to say, this is what we stand for, and if you can't stand for it, you can't stand with us.
And Kelly, can we make diversity attractive for other companies that are thinking about taking a stronger stand in it by saying that diversity actually leads to higher and better profits?
You know, I'm so tired of this because so much research has shown that. And I'm not just talking about diversity in gender and ethnicity and race, which is important. But today, one of the more discriminated groups are our young people. I have a CFO now who's 28 years old, and that was people were so shocked. So I think, yes, we can continue to say, look at the statistics, showing people that it works. But I do think that there's an emotional component to it as well. There's an intellectual component that's really serviced through research and data, and we have to continue to promote that. But what I worry about is we've been promoting that for a long time. So I do think it has to become deeply personal, deeply emotional, and making sure that while we're showing that it improves our innovation and productivity and our overall success, I'm not embarrassed to say it's the right thing to do. The demographics of our country have changed dramatically, and we need to make sure everyone's talent and skills are at the table for both reasons, both for success and for our integrity.
Kelly, you have you're a CEO currently. You have been at the top of the major companies in the energy industry. You've been dealing with escalating energy prices and figuring out ways to make sure that you're engaging in renewable resource development. But you have a very interesting background. You touched on it just a little bit, yes. But I just wanted the listeners to know that you are a coal miner's daughter from West Virginia. Yes. So how did you go from where you started from to the heights of corporate America, not only America, but the world? You've worked all over the world.
Right. Yeah, this is why it's really important to me, too. Obviously, people wrote me off. You know, I'm blonde. I was blonde, and I was a woman, and I was a hick, and my mother always said that, Kelly, you're a blonde, you're a woman, you're a hick. Don't make your problems worse by being stupid. I mean, but I would say, though, that one of the reasons that I got some opportunities because there were people standing in the background raising their hands for me, and they were often white men, and I think we all owe our success to, yes, our own initiative, but to somebody else who stood in our corner. But because there were people who took risk on me throughout my career. I may not have had the background. I was a DJ my first job. I have a degree in journalism, and I played Kelly T at WLOG, and I wrote for a newspaper, and that was my dream. But my point was that people took risks on me, even when I didn't look like the obvious candidate, and certainly I had to deliver. But I think it's always all of our success comes from both our own initiative and for someone willing to raise their hand on our behalf. And I think for me now it's just my turn. Yes, of course, I went to school and I took risks on myself by moving around and doing some things. But I still believe taking risk on myself is one thing, but having others take risk on me really made the difference.
Well, Kelly, you are definitely somebody to look up to, and I look forward to reading your biography. This is Kelly Tomlin, CEO of Intren, talking about diversity. It's time now to take a break. We'll have a lot more coming up. Today on the Wintrust Business Lunch, we have the privilege of being joined by CEO and President of Wintrust Mortgage, David Robin. Hi, David.
Hello, G. How are you today?
Oh, I am so great. I'm so happy that you're in studio.
Oh, it's good to be here.
I'm excited also to find out some more information about housing policies, which is coming up in a little bit. But first, because it's that time of year, it's the season when you're giving to a lot of charities and you're buying a lot of things online. You have some information about protecting your confidential financial information, right?
I do. You know, 'tis the season, and it's a time when a lot of people are out there burning up the credit card and buying stuff online.
Actually, I should literally burn mine up so that I don't use it.
So in doing so, those people that have made a living and a craft out of hacking and phishing and trying to get consumers to take the bait for stealing their money or their identities online, this is their season as well. And we see a proliferation of hacking attempts. We see a proliferation of phishing attempts where they are really trying to get you to take the bait because you're distracted, you're moving quickly, and you've got a lot of distraction going on in your life. And so we see it in the mortgage industry. We see it in the financial services industry. Today is the time to be really diligent, and not just with your emails. I think there's a little bit of a misconception that hacking and phishing is just an email thing. It's not. Today, it also includes people trying to record your voice over phone calls and bogus phone calls. Absolutely. And they use that to create voice identities, to get passwords, etc. We also find a proliferation of text campaigns. So my message to those listening is, have the same level of diligence around your emails, around your phones, as you do around texting. They have become incredibly smart, incredibly complicated, and it's a full cottage industry that's alive and well. So be mindful. If it doesn't seem legitimate, if it seems unusual, take a pause before you click on it, you answer that phone call. Just be mindful that the holiday season, it ramps up.
So, David, would you recommend just not answering a call if you don't recognize the number?
That's a personal decision, but I will tell you, I don't answer any phone call that I don't recognize the phone number.
Okay. And then is it okay to use any ATM, or should you use only particular ATMs?
Well, I think like anything, if you see an ATM machine out there that doesn't look like it's well lit, it doesn't look like it's well protected, anything about it looks unusual, you're probably best not to use it. But banks invest an inordinate amount of money around data security, information protection, and obviously the financial security related to those machines. So if it's a national bank or it's a state chartered bank, chances are it's going to be safe. But if you see anything unusual, some attachment attached to it that doesn't look normal, question everything.
Well, I'm curious what you do. You're a very smart man. You're in the industry, an industry veteran. You've been with Wintrust since 1994.
I have.
During the holidays, do you tend to only use one credit card, or what measures do you take to make sure that you're not going to get hacked?
Try to simplify my life. I use only two credit cards. That's my approach, and with my wife. And so that works for us. But I just would tell you, diligence, question everything. It's important to be protected.
Well, you heard it from David, and he knows. Okay, moving on. There's a lot of new real estate housing trends right now, not only locally, but nationally, too.
Yeah, I just read a report earlier this week that said all 50 states enjoyed housing appreciation this year to date. And that's obviously an illustration of the recovery that we've seen since the housing recession. It's encouraging for those that have not only previously, but looking to utilize and leverage real estate as an investment asset. So locally, we have seen a continued recovery here in the Chicagoland area. But like nationally, there are pockets of market of real estate that has done extremely well, and other areas that have been soft or has had a harder time in recovering. So as you've heard the mantra before in real estate, it's location, location, mm-hmm. location.
And you also say that there are technology changes that are happening right now in the mortgage industry. Are these changes going to make our lives easier?
I would say they're transformational. And an analogy that I share with our team frequently is, and I don't mean to pick on the airline industry, I don't mean that at all, but you go up to an airline counter and you go to ask them to change your seat location from a window to an aisle, and it mm-hmm. takes them 15 minutes and they're just typing like crazy. And you say, look, I just wanted to change my seat. I didn't want you to build a plane. And that's really an illustration to me of some of the legacy software and technology that industries have been hamstrung with. And the mortgage industry has been no different. We, too, have had legacy software that has evolved from the 80s, and it has really wrestled to keep up. Well, in the last 6 to 8 years, a number of fintech companies have worked very hard to create solutions that are game-changing for our industry. And I'll give you an example of that. The historical application to clear to close of a mortgage transaction has historically been about 45 days or so, some a little less, some a little more, depending on the complexity of your transaction. We've seen new technology where we've taken a customer from application to actually getting them cleared to close in 6 days.
You're kidding.
No, it's incredible, and that's really ready to close. Now, that obviously means a customer who might be a W-2 wage earner who has a relatively simple transaction. They've got all their assets sitting in the bank. They're buying a property that's relatively standard. There's nothing really unusual about the transaction. But that's where technology is today. And more of people that are looking to apply are now starting to benefit from some of that game-changing technology. It reduced the time it takes, clearly reduces the anxiety, and it also helps be a driver for reducing the cost to originate a loan.
So you're just talking about mortgage technology. So let's continue the conversation and talk about the proliferation of non-QM mortgage products and whether that's a good or a bad thing for consumers.
Yeah, for listeners, non-QM really stands for qualified mortgage. The Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act of 2010 came out and created a lot of regulation and oversight for the mortgage industry in particular. And through that, they really wanted to define what is a mortgage that's considered safe and sound or a qualified transaction. And anything that was outside of those guidelines would be viewed as higher risk and perhaps a non-qualified transaction to meet that safety and sound standard. Now, there's a couple of notable carve-outs to that. One would be jumbo loans. Today, loans above $510,400. And also loans where the loan-to-value, so what your housing debt would be divided by your total monthly income, if it's greater than 43%, it would be viewed higher risk non-QM. And so they created a temporary patch that said even though your debt-to-income ratios would exceed 43%, if it was approved by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's automated underwriting engines, it would still be qualified as a qualified mortgage. And that helped a lot of consumers because it obviously helped them afford and be able to qualify, but it created a transition from here to there. Now, that patch is set to expire in the a year after next. And when that expires, it creates a real void in the industry in terms of available liquidity for people to qualify for higher DTI or debt-to-income ratios. There have been some products that have been terrific to solve that solution, and that's the good part of non-QM loans. But there's also been a return of some of these, what I would call reduced or no documentation loans. And quite simply, I'm not a fan. I think that when you look at the home ownership rate, historically, we've averaged at the U.S. at about 67%. We got to almost 70% in 2008, and that's when we hit the disaster that was subsequently came thereafter. That 3% difference is interesting because it's almost similar to the amount of people that ended up giving back their mortgages or giving back their real estate. So 67-68% seems to be that break-even point for us mm-hmm. as a society. And today we are about 2.5% below that. So there's opportunity to improve the homeownership rate, but there's a point of diminishing returns.
So I have about a minute left.
Sure.
So just really quickly, why home ownership still matters, according to David?
Sure. You know, at the end of the recession, the U.S. government created a housing policy for us that we enjoy to this day. And what we found was that it became the single greatest source of wealth creation for the consumers in this economy. It also created social benefits that have been long-standing and far-reaching. But there's the other thing, which is what I call emotional equity. I've seen it recently with my two daughters in the last 3 months have purchased their very first homes. And to see what it does for you in terms of a sense of pride, a sense of accomplishment, the investment that you have, it's impressive.
I've heard of.
Well, you know what? One day I am also going to have that emotional equity. I will one day. Well, so thank you so much for being in studio with us today. This is David Robin with all of his wisdom and insight, CEO and president of Wintrust Mortgage. We're welcoming in studio right now, Amy Guth.
Hello.
Welcome, Amy.
Hello. How's it going?
Fantastic. Okay, so you've got the Crane's Daily Gist, right?
That's right. So today on the show, I spoke with Greg Hines for the second day in a row. He was on the podcast yesterday, but he's back today because last night, Mayor Lightfoot unveiled an economic development plan that was really interesting. It's kind of got seven areas of focus, three saying, hey, here are areas we need to, we are already doing well on, here's four, there's a lot of potential.
And it's really long term too, right?
It is. It's a 10-year plan.
Wow.
And what's really interesting about it, you know, every mayor Mayors has done this. Emmanuel did this 8 years ago. Hers has a lot more specificity in many ways, but also she has a plan attached to it to revamp and try to recoup some of the population that we've lost and get back to that 3 million mark with population. So I talked to Greg Hines about that. You know, he's been on that beat a long time. He knows a lot of stuff. So his insight was very valuable. But, you know, other stories I talked about today on The Gist, Loyola, that hospital system, is moving to $15 an hour just in October. In fact, on this very show, I mentioned how in October they moved to a $13.50 an hour minimum wage. And the CEO has announced that they're moving to $15 an hour and they're going to adjust for wage compression, which it comes up a lot because that's when, hey, if you're already around $15-16 bucks an hour, then everybody else is making that. What happens to your wages? So those are going to get adjusted too. So that and many other stories on The Gist today.
And really quick, just about Boeing.
Just about Boeing, and that is for the first time since 2015, Airbus is going to be finishing ahead of Boeing, you know, numbers-wise. You know, a lot of competition between those two, but Boeing has been just embroiled in so much controversy, a lot of stuff with their 737 MAX grounded. So that is another issue I talked about today on The Daily Gist.
The fabulous and informative Amy Guth with Crane's Daily Gist.
Thank you.
Right now, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.